Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Out to move, come out there.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we moved. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you... Sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I saw coming along. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They want to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show me your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
All right. That last audio played by Dr. Umar Johnson, that might be considered old news. There's a person, actually two people, but the first one, I just discovered this guy about an hour ago. I want you to go online, and well, first thing in our scrolling marquee, let me put before that. Today's podcast is titled TAF, T-A-F, all caps, TAF Africa Global, Mustafa N.G. Hopefully I'm pronouncing the last name correctly, N.G., Mustafa N.G. So, and like I said, I discovered this guy about an hour ago. If you go to any search engine and type in TAF, T-A-F, not Taft, but TAF, that's T-A-F, TAF, Africa Global, And then also look up Mustafa NG. That's spelled N-G-I-E. Now, there's a Mustafa NG who is a soccer player, or what they call in Africa, a football player. That's the wrong one. The Mustafa NG that I'm talking about is a carpenter slash developer. And his goal is, and he started off with a house. Oh, look up, here's another one I want you to look up. Taff, T-A-F, Taff City. Look that up. Okay. He basically, him alone, but there are others, but today we're mainly featuring Mustafa NG. He obliterates everything that I just played with Umar Johnson's Auto War. Just totally obliterates it. I got to find a way to load up audio of him. But also, if you want to hear him speak, go to YouTube and put in Taff, T-A-F. No, not, it's not Taft with a T, but Taff, T-A-F, Africa Global, Mustafa NG, or put in Mustafa NG, that's N-G-I-E, Carpenter, and then you can actually hear him speak. His goal, now, you know, one of my favorites to play on here is the Nine Friends thing. This guy's got a goal of building 1 million homes throughout Africa. He's got about 2,000 or so plus homes built already. He's not doing tiny houses. Okay. He's doing more of the regular size homes in Africa, but some people call him Mr. Taff, T-A-F, but absolutely, he just obliterates. I might have to start playing the Umar Johnson thing. Now, the other person I want to mention that obliterates Umar Johnson's thing is, he's also in Africa, he's Nigerian. Mustafa Njai, I think, is from the Gambia. It's Aliko, and that's spelled A-L-I, Ali, Ko, K-O, one word, Aliko Dangote, D-A-N-G-O-T-E. Hopefully I'm pronouncing those names correctly. He is the wealthiest person on the planet. And you can there's a Wikipedia article written about him. I haven't found one on Mustafa Njai, but they're too bad, mother, shut your mouth. Okay. But he's the richest black person on the planet. You know, so, you know, Oprah, I'm tired of hearing about Oprah, but I give Oprah her props and everything. You know, you can't take anything away from her. But these two brothers are on the continent. They, both of them, and their others, totally obliterate what Umar Johnson says. Totally obliterates it. But the one I want to expose you the most today is Mustafa NG. That's Mustafa and the last name NG. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. N-G-I-E. And then his company, or one of his companies, is Taff, T-A-F, not Taff with a T, but Taff, T-A-F, Africa Global. His goal is to build 1 million homes on the continent. How many has he built so far? In excess of 2,000. You best believe I'm listening to his videos every day from here on out. 773, your mic is open. 773, you might have your mic muted.
Oh, yeah, I was muted. Sorry. Grand Rising.
No problem. That happened
Buenos
to me
Dias. Yeah. As I'm, you know, I don't want you to have my background noise. Aliko Dangote, probably have his
name. Did you look him
up?
I think
I heard of him before. Certainly, yeah. I'm doing my homework. You know, you always say
he's the wealthiest black person on the planet.
I see. Wow. And then he became Nigeria's first billionaire in 07.
Yeah, and there's a handful of African billionaires, black billionaires. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you bring a billionaire over here, you might hear of, well, the credit over here, now we've got over here in the Western Hemisphere, we got Jay-Z, Kanye West, Rihanna, her product line has made her worth $1 billion. And they're all first-generation billionaires, so, you know, hey, you got to give props to all of them. But wealthier people than them, or I just named two of them, you just named one, Aliko Dangote, and he's in cement, and he's in various industries. And he's based out of Nigeria. And then this guy that I just discovered, no more than an hour ago, Mustafi NG, with TAF Africa Global. He describes his identity professionally. He's a carpenter. And there are videos where he shows you his first project that he put together was the house he lived in. Talking about very humble beginnings. And then he has a development called TAF, T-A-F, City. There are videos on that as well. And he started that with about five houses. So, I mean, what a way for me to start the day. So I had to share it with you guys.
Thank you for that.
And like I said, I might have to stop playing the Umar Johnson Art of War thing because they have their own money. They make their own money. They employ black folks. But you've got some counterparts here in the United States, but you know, a lot of people just don't hear about people like Mustafa NG or Aliko Dangote. I mean, over here in the United States, Herman Russell out of Atlanta. I don't know if Herman Russell's still living, but Herman Russell was a very impressive builder. Herman Russell started off shining shoes as a young man. So he went from shining shoes to... I don't know if he made the Forbes 400, but he was often at the top or near the top of Black Enterprise 100 wealthiest business people. Herman Russell out of Atlanta. And there are others, too, that just a lot of people just don't hear about in normal everyday conversation. We might hear, typically when you hear about a black person who's wealthy, typically you're going to hear about an athlete or maybe an entertainer. But there are people out there like Herman Russell, Bob Johnson, who started BET, Bob Johnson's first wife. You know what? You can even throw Don Cornelius into the conversation. Chicago's got a bunch of them up that come out of that city. You know what? Even right here on It's My House, you know, one of our regulars, Pianchi, he's a builder. I mean, he's retired now, but. So you typically don't, I'm tired of hearing about the LeBron Jameses and people like that. But I just ran across this guy, Mustafa NG. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that last name right. Something, because it's one guy, Watermeyer, I subscribe to his videos. So I said, I haven't ran across Watermeyer in my news feed in a while, so let me go see what he's talking about, because he features a lot of interesting people on the continent of Africa. So, and what popped up was Mustafa NG. And I said, I got to feature this guy. Later on when I'm able to get some audio of him. So that's why I told you guys to look up the name and then check out YouTube where you actually see him dialoguing with people and you can see some of his work over in Africa. So anyway, and if people didn't know about Aliko Dangote, because a lot of times when people, when they hear about one person, they'll say, well, that's just one person. But there are other people like that. And you don't have to be in Africa. You do have some homegrowns here that rarely get talked about. In my opinion, they rarely get talked about. People know about LeBron James. They know about Michael Jackson. They know about Denzel Washington. But how many times do you hear people bring up what's his name? Herman Russell. Jesus, I don't know what I inhaled. Anyway, Reba, what's on the agenda with you before we go to the other callers?
Well, I met a developer on yesterday. Got on the phone. I got him in on the call before we got off the podcast yesterday. The solar panel builder. So, the resources are available, and it's just the ether, I guess, is open to be able to receive resources to gain the wealth that God has attained for us in our circle, because the support is there, and we're speaking up and speaking out. So that's what I agree on that a closed mouth thing is said, because the brother, his name is Dr. Mark Stern, and it's from Chicago, and he was actually at the Starbucks when Dr. John Jackson and I were sitting, so that's who he greeted us as we were ending our meeting after the podcast. He was a developer with several condominiums and other properties, motivational speakers, and all over. And has a podcast called Flawless Mindset. So if you guys want to look that up, you can
now,
check
what's
it out.
The name of it?
Powerful. Flawless Mindset.
Lawless.
Flawless
you
Mindset.
You said lawless or flawless?
Flawless. Flawless.
Oh, flawless. Got it. Okay. Flawless Mindset.
Yeah, so, interestingly enough, he's promoting 78 Sports Radio. Not Flawless Mindset. It's Flawless Mentality and BE. So,
you don't have to
figure out what the BE stands for. Flawless Mentality.
Okay, Flawless Mentality.
So on YouTube, go ahead and subscribe to the channel, Flawless Mentality and BE. Flawless Mentality and BE. So.
Well, let me zip over to.
Pretty powerful stuff, yeah. So when I get over to Starbucks this afternoon, I certainly, I would love to have him in. He actually. Picking up a new cell phone. It was stolen. Mm-hmm. So, although he's the wealthy one, he's the wealthier one, because I'm wealthy too. I've got to go get my money.
Right.
Because I have a second line on my Sprint account. And I was like, well, if you got a working phone, you could just use my other line that I don't even use. But nevertheless, very modest.
opening up doors for sisters on the way in. And so, but he's like myself and Mama Evelyn.
I'm on his channel right now.
Yeah, he's like myself and Mama Evelyn. He don't sugarcoat nothing. He's very serious. He overheard Dr. Jackson and I. He saw us talking. He was on the inside of Starbucks. It was just too loud to do the podcast. And so that's why I
you know what,
elected
that would be
outside.
A good place to have meetings too, Starbucks.
Yeah, and actually he was doing his podcast. Now, honestly, I don't know the community investment, the inner city community investment of Starbucks. What I heard, there was something, and I will talk to my older brothers and sisters who were sharing information about Starbucks. I don't know the support that they give to the black community. I don't know what their agenda is regarding us. I do believe in keeping wealth in the family. If it's the white family, black family, Asian family, I don't really agree with integration to a certain degree. I feel that, you know, people should go where they want to go. Don't be saying, well, you can't come into my community. I just want to know who you are. Oh, by the way, when I was studying at Northeastern University, I got to do my homework. I got to refresh myself on this information gain, because not knowledge until I attain it and know it and can convey it. However, during the Dream Movement, when the Latinos were trying to become citizens of the United States, they had this there was a platform. Someone was running for office at one point, I think, for presidency. But there was an accountability that says that you cannot come to America unless you have intentions on bringing something to the table. What are your intentions to coming? So when we talk about integration, I know I kind of delved off into that a little bit, not too much on a tangent. I just know that not only Dr. Mark Stearns that I met on yesterday, and Mama Evelyn, yourself, myself, I'm not what you call, I don't know, prejudice. I'm an educator. I'm still learning. I'm an information seeker, but keep in mind, as someone who has a law background, I will get my official law degree soon, but I've mitigated and litigated and won arguments and cases and favor in the court system. So the thing is, it's about the play on words. The lawyers have to be well-equipped with the language, with what is going to either move on the hearts of the jury, the judge, argue the case. You got to be articulate and well-equipped with the law. And in my case, I actually have a few things where I'm, because my first college experience was policy implementation. So I will say that, you know, in summation on what I wanted to share is that God is bringing out, he's bringing into fruition the connects that we need. And I was sharing with Dr. Don Jackson, who is impromptu, you know, it was an impromptu invitation as a guest. And thank you for allowing him to speak on yesterday on the podcast. It's my health radio. He actually has a project. I'm supporting that. So my idea of the Black Youth Metropolis Enterprises for Entrepreneurship Movement is to actually use that young energy to make sure that we are actually collaborating on different levels. I don't necessarily want to necessarily do what, let's say, Mama Evelyn is doing. She baked muffins. Now, we talked about me baking some brownies because I do probably need to have a consumable product of my own that I'm branding, because everybody don't want to learn to speak Spanish, you know. A lot of people do, but people do eat, and a lot of people, even more people, I believe, eat brownies. So I will work on that in the near future. But to make sure that we are in collaboration, whether we're bartering, it doesn't have to always be a money exchange. And actually, I know some of the Clubhouse conversations that we've had have included, and I know I was in some of the rooms with some of the younger generation, you know, millennials, the 20 and 30-year-olds. Oh, my gosh. I do see us is with this Bitcoin, this digital currency. I see our people moving back to the bartering system. Currency came of as a promissory note. Cash is a promissory note. The dollar is a promissory note. So we are actually going, I believe that we're going to move I see us moving back to a more of a bartering system because they're going to, with everything going digital, they're going to have control. And that was another concern. It was a debate that some of these young intellectuals, black intellectuals, were having on this particular clubhouse. And I'll share that link with you so you'll know what I'm talking about. Maybe we can discuss that at another time. But certainly met Dr. Mark Stearns on yesterday, and he's promoting and supporting 78 Sports TV and boxing and the philanthropy that this brother does. I don't know the brother's name who runs this channel, but I did subscribe. 78 Sports TV. Something about he's equipping the boxers to have their own business. Just like my concept with Black Youth Metropolis. You don't have to be a culinary artist to have your own business, but you're a singer, you're a dancer, you are an entrepreneur. You are actually marketing and selling your gift, your talent. So that's what we're teaching here. And actually, I got some of my initial, it was like a boot camp, which it developed into a finishing school. A friend of mine who's an actor invited me in. Some wealthy lady paid for him and a guest, a friend, to attend a boot camp, which turned out to be a finishing school for artists, which was started by, it was called Artist the Entrepreneur, by Lisa Canning, who was a sport. She's from the north side of Chicago. Lisa Canning used to own a clarinet shop, Lisa's Clarinet Shop. So she sold clarinets, you know, and then she started that company. But I was in the class with jewelry makers, white, black, different nationalities of people. So some of our instructors in that class were leaders and organizers of Lollapalooza, the big festival that we have here in Chicago, the Looking Glass Theater, the Gorilla Theater. So pretty much these are people who have actually done some big things, not only in entertainment, but organizers in the community as well. But, yeah, suddenly we got some good stuff, you know. So, yeah, I got to see who's on Clubhouse, too. But Dennis, Harold Dennis is my friend who's an actor, 99 films on the wall. He's actually accomplished that at this point. I think last year he hit his 99th film. You can find him on IMBD. Other than that, our event is actually postponed, the video shoot portion of the event, for June 25th, you guys. I have Brother L.A. just to update you and your audience. June 25th, we still will be doing the video shoot, but not at that location where we're going to have the video shoot and event. So the event is going to be postponed at the Royal Sea West Banquet till September 24th, same time, 6 p.m. So if anyone has purchased tickets, your ticket is still good for a later date. Refunds will be handled by WF Dot. So certainly reach out to him through your brownpaperticket.com app link or online, and he'll handle that if you want a refund. Otherwise, you can certainly look forward to an awesome live band, a live concert with the live band, live WF Doc and myself, Reba La, in concert on September 24th at the Royal Sea West Banquet here in Chicago. Well, Chicago area, that's Willow Springs. So.
All right.
And that was an On Fire Clubhouse yesterday, so thank you so much for hanging in there with me.
Yeah,
as usual.
How long did you talk last night?
Ooh, I think that was three.
Yeah, it was a good 3 hours. Yeah.
Three and three quarters of an hour, I think. Or at least
It was.
And three quarters of an hour, yeah.
I had it was a good one, though.
Well,
the night before that, it was 4 hours.
I did not say that we were tag teaming, but you noticed that I was, you know, I muted my microphone. I was handling some things from time to time, but still listening in. So, yeah, that's good. So we're learning. And
right.
Brother Huey was on point. The others, his team, I like how he had the logos of the different speakers because it identifies them as a team, you know. That was cool. So I'd like to do that for us or something, too. We have our pictures, but he, you know, he's a graphic artist and among other things. So that was cool.
Right. Now, when I come back, we're going
to
take another call.
We need to ping others into the room, too, remember? So when we're on there, we need to ping others into the room, and then that's how we can build our followers, yeah, and our listeners.
Okay. When I come back, before we take another call, I want to get your thoughts on look the guy up. Mustafa NG, that's NJIE. He's the CEO of TAF Africa Global. Give me your thoughts on him. Now, there's a Mustafa NG football player, soccer player. Now, that's not the one. Put in Mustafa NG Carpenter. And then TAF. TAF Africa Global, and then that'll be right back at the, we'll be, I got to get some water to clear my throat, so we'll be back in 5 minutes.
Okay.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us, we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tons of CO2 each year. Basil Okalo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from SolarNow retailers to get their businesses going.
SolarNow is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technicians, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
All right, more positive energy from the continent of Africa. Now, later on, we're going to be discussing during this podcast. Wait a minute, something happened on Juneteenth. Let me find that. I believe it's in D.C. I was just reading it. Wait a minute. Something in D.C. happened on Juneteenth. I'm trying to get the email. The text. Okay, here we go. Oh, no, you know what? Email. Let me go to the email. I was reading the wrong thing. Okay. We're going to discuss also, you guys can chime in on it, several incidents leave dead teen at illegal D.C. Juneteenth festival. D.C. shootings, gunfire near Juneteenth, illegal concert kills 15-year-old, wounds three others, including an officer. We're going to get into that during this live stream as well. But before we do that, okay, let's get back to Mustafa NG. And Reba, did you got a chance to read a little bit about him or anything?
Yeah, he is amazing. First of all, I agree even with Dr. Mark Stern on yesterday. And you for yourself, part of who we are is we get blessed. And the blessing and the favor of God is just immense, because that's how, a lot of people don't realize that's how you attain wealth. My dad was like that. My mom was like that. If you are not, if you don't have the certain type of human spirit, I was reading, it said the story of Mustafa. Let me see what is the title. The story of Mustafa NG, passed as a philanthropist. So he has a human spirit. He's recognized for his human kindness. He's running a business, but he's also reaching out. So as a philanthropist, I was just actually, I had not finished the video, the first, because you just introduced me to you know, this wonderful businessman. Interesting, I see he only has 842 subscribers, so we are in on a ground level. Philanthropist and entrepreneur. Awesome. So I just seen some children skating on a rooftop out there in was it Gambia?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so TAF Africa Foundation is the foundation that he has. Pretty much down to earth brother. Yeah.
Okay. Now we got TAF. Yeah, TAF, no T on it. TAF, Africa Global. Mm-hmm.
40 years of hands-on experience across all levels of construction and real estate.
Okay, he's got a few videos on YouTube. He describes himself as a carpenter. And one of his videos, you see his first project was a home he actually lives in. I guess he still might live in it, but it was the first house he built. So what we're going to do, we're going to come back with another caller, right, because I've got to conduct some business. It's going to take me a few minutes to do it, so when I come back that way, you guys can be uninterrupted. So we're going to do Baltic, which this guy, he's got his own Baltic, and over in the Gambia.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change comes to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
Shit, dude!
PTSD to in your face.
Yeah, dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh.
Beat her motherfucking ass. She feel like you a motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga kid. That nigga hurting himself.
You from New State.
It's over. It's over. It's over. What I say is over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck you. Let's go across the street.
Because I ain't called it. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns. Because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-WAC movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place. There's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old. And I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Today I'm going to do a video that's a little bit different. It's more of an informational type video on how to get them coins up on YouTube. How can you actually make $20,000 or more a month on YouTube? Everybody and their mama wants to be a YouTuber. What is the number one reason why people want to be a YouTuber? To get them coins though. Everybody wants that vlogger lifestyle, right? Where you can work when you want, travel when you want, you know, stay home with the kids, and still make a bomb-ass income. If you're like me and you really have no idea where to start or how or what you're shooting for. You know what I mean? It's like, I know I want to make $20,000 a month, but how many views do I really need to make $20,000 a month? And what do I need to do to get there? This video will shed some light on some actual figures that you can base your goals on. Let me just start off by saying, I personally have not yet made $20,000 a month, but it's my goal to get there plus get 20K plus a month. And it should be your goal too. It should be everybody's goal. I do a lot of research about YouTube and trends and things like that. I don't always follow the trends because I'm just stubborn like that. I watch a lot of people who are more successful in YouTube than I am so that I can see what they're doing and kind of mimic that. And that's a really important thing. People say be genuine, be unique, be yourself. Half the battle is doing what's popular within and what everybody else is watching right now. So you can be unique, but don't be so unique to the fact to where you're just, you completely box yourself in and you're not reaching a popular market. I like to watch YouTubers that are bigger than me, not necessarily watch their content, because sometimes what's in is something that I'm not interested in. But I do always listen when they give advice. As cocky as people may think I am, I still have a lot to learn. I have a lot of information to give, but I still have so much to learn. So, like I said, I do a lot of research. What I have come to understand, I have found a general idea of where you need to be as far as frequency and uploads and how many views you need to make $20,000 a month. We'll start with my actual goal, okay? My more realistic goal. I do have long-term goals. Of course, my long-term goal is to be making 20K plus a month. That'd be amazing, okay? Like, hit a like if y'all want to make $20,000 a month. All right, just hit a like just for the idea of that. Just for the idea that you can make that off of social media. Okay, my initial short-term goal is to be making $5,000 a month on YouTube. So, am I making $5,000 yet? No, not quite, but I am almost there. I'm talking about just AdSense money. I'm not talking about partnerships or sponsorships that you may have with companies, because of course that number goes up if you're talking about YouTube in a whole. But today we're just going to be talking about views and AdSense and what you can get generally. Okay, if you want to make $5,000 a month and you are consistently uploading every day or at least 6 out of 7 days a week all month long for let's say 30 days, that is a pretty consistent upload schedule. All right. If you are uploading like that, every single one of your videos would need to be at about 21,000 views for the entire month. And this is just, like I said, a general idea. Now, YouTube gets kind of funky because it does have what's called a CPM rate. It's basically the rate you're paid for your ads that are ran on your channel, under your videos, or in between on your ad break. It's kind of hard to kind of figure out and pinpoint because it really goes off of the type of channel that you have. A DIY channel is not going to have the same as, say, a gaming channel. It's going to be completely different because their advertisers are different, you know? And so they pay at different rates. So you may get paid at different rates. You may get paid more than I would. I maybe get paid for more than you would, depending on what our content is. I would suggest that if you're trying to really pinpoint how much your videos are making you, I would say definitely learn your analytics. Dive into those. It'll tell you everything that you need to know to make you successful on YouTube. If you were to post a video every single day, get 21K views at the end of 30 days, you probably have roughly around 600,000 views. If you have around 600,000 views for the month and you divide that by 30 days, that's about 21,000 views per video. Some people say you get paid per ad clicks. Some people say you get paid per view. I can't even really tell you what it is because it's so different for every channel. And I honestly think that's how YouTube wants it. I think they want it to where it's so different that people can't come up with a perfect like way to game the system. I don't know. You know, it's my own personal theory, but it's so hard. You can figure it out, but it's really just, it's channel specific. Something you just have to learn about your channel. If you wanted to double that and say make $10,000 a month, well, double that number. If you have to get 21,000 views per video for 30 days, then it would have to probably be more around like 40,000 views. You see what I'm saying? For 30 days on every video, and then you'll probably double that number and make 10,000. In order to make $20,000 a month, you would probably be needing to get around 100 to 150,000 views per video every upload for 30 days. Once you get to that type of consistency, I don't think that you have to upload as frequently. You could probably upload less. If you're getting 100 to 150,000 views per video, then girl, you don't need to be here. You've already figured out the game. You've already gotten it. You're good to go. So these YouTubers that you're seeing out here who are getting 1.1, 1.2, 1.5 million views on one video in a month, those YouTubers are making serious dinero, okay? They're making upwards of $50K a month, and I don't even know how that's even possible to make $50,000 a month, but people out here are doing it in these YouTube streets, y'all. It's serious, okay? Here comes my motivational moment. Y'all know I had to put it out there for y'all. You know I had to do it, okay? Y'all know I can't let you go without motivating y'all just a little bit, okay? For all of the people out there who want to start YouTube or just starting YouTube, please keep going. There is enough money out here. There's enough money out here for us all to eat, honey, and you just have to go out and get it, okay? There are some people who started out smaller than me who are even bigger than me just because simply they could be consistent, and I just can't seem to get my shit together and be consistent. There's also YouTubers who started at the same time as me who blew up, and I'm just still little old me, little old Chrissy, trying to buy the crumb like, can you please throw me a subscriber? Oh, can you please? Can you please throw me a subscriber? But I'm going to make my way. I'm going to get there. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to get there, y'all. It might take me a little bit longer, but I'm going to get there. Just do your research. Monitor your own analytics, your own page very closely, and those things will really help you. But at least you have a guideline. You know what I'm saying? Who wants to shoot their shot and you don't even know what you're aiming for? You know what I mean? Like, you don't even know what you need. It's like going hunting and you don't even know what season it is. Like, am I hunting deer? Am I hunting elk? What am I looking for? I don't know. I'm just out here with a gun, and I'm just trying to shoot it down, trying to win the prize, but I just don't even know what I'm looking for or how to do it. You know what I'm saying? So at least this way, you have a little bit of an idea. Around 20,000 plus on every video, they're making at least 5,000. Could be more, could be a little less, but around that. What you can shoot for. So I'm trying to shoot for 5K a month. Is it enough? No, it ain't never enough. Once I get to 5K, I'm going to want 10K. Once I get to 10K, I'm going to want 20K. Once I get to 20, I'm going to want 30. And all that, you know, I'm just going to want to keep going up and up from there. You have to be motivated. You have to be consistent. And just remember, consistency is key, okay? That is it's just so key. So I hope this helps you just a little bit in your quest to becoming an ultimate YouTuber, okay? Okay, okay. Get them coins, girl. Get them. Go get them. Go ahead. Go get them, okay? Anyway, y'all, I hope you guys enjoyed this vlog. Hit a thumbs up if you haven't already, and I will see you guys next vlog.
Take the bottom 20 worst communities in the U.S., okay?
Okay.
Take bottom 20. I want to hear what you're going to say about this. Bottom 20. It's a required reading to read those three books before fifth grade.
Absolutely.
Let's just say we do that. And let's do the math for those kids. Bottom. It's 100,000 kids. Let's just say it's a small number, 100,000 kids. If they were required to read Richest Man in Babylon, Think and Grow Rich, As a Man Think It, right?
Right.
Before sixth grade, if they were required to read that, you think how big of a difference you think it would have made percentage-wise?
Tremendous. Tremendous.
What is tremendous on 100,000 percentage-wise?
Probably 90%.
You think that big of a number?
I think so.
That's a big number you're talking about. So let me ask you, how come our politicians aren't recommending kids to read books?
Well,
how come we're not recommending some of these books for us to read?
Well, a lot of them don't really know the community. They never go in the community. We have people making decisions for us that has never been in the community. Like, we have people who make laws that have never been to a jail. Like, how can you tell how much time a person should spend in prison when you've never been to the prison? You don't know what it's like to go to prison. They never come to our communities. They never get out to
meet. You think you have to go to jail to be able to know how to influence you? No. I mean, it's kind of like saying, I'm a gynecologist, but I'm a man, I've never had a kid. The reason why I don't want to use that is because they'll use that as an excuse. What I'm saying is, why aren't they creating opportunity? Myself, okay, I'm a math kid. I had a 1.8 GPA in high school, okay? If I was in your community, I'm probably running with you.
Right.
But my savior was Army. Because a guy named Jesus Guerin came and told me, says, you're headed towards that side, part of your life. And he signed me up for the Army. I went to the Army. Life changed.
Right.
I was working at Burger King. I'm like a regular guy doing nothing. Right. But the reason why I asked that is I'm trying to see, one, I rarely ever hear any campaign, any politician talk about, let's have our kids read the right books.
They don't. They don't. I totally agree. I mean, even my book, I've had teachers read my book and they ask me, why am I so blunt in my book? And I said, because our kids are tired of BS.
Okay, I had to take care of some business here. Anyway, TAF, TAF, Africa Global, and then I got texted information on some happenings in D.C. So, Reba, I'm going to open back up your mic, but I'm going to let 314 in for comment right now. So, 314, your mic is open.
Man, L.A.
Yes, sir.
I came on at 10:15. No, 10 o'clock. Well, we could have been out of here at 11 o'clock. I'm going to have to work with you on that stuff.
You know what? You will. I got caught up with some. I had to take care of some business.
You play these skits over and over and over. I know them by heart.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to get rid of the Umar Johnson one.
You need to get rid of Umar Johnson. I'm just making a pinch. It's because you pay for them. And a whole lot of them, too. Other ones, too. Even Baldwin. That really isn't practical.
We're going to get rid of Umar Johnson first.
Yeah, I get tired of hearing that victimization stuff, as always. Now, what's the discussion? I sent you a couple of articles.
Yeah, you sent me an article on the Juneteenth D.C. stuff.
It just goes to show you blacks have privilege. You can stage a festival in D.C. under Mayor Bowser's realm and other politicians there illegally. Where's your permit? Anybody else would have had to have a permit. If it was a white organization, they would have had a permit. And it can't say it was just happenstance because the police blocked off the streets with formal barricades to end up with some of their officers being shot. It just goes
and,
to show you
well,
the mentality in some of these people, man.
I can't imagine you not going to get an argument out of me on that.
It just run completely buckwild. There's a lot of illegal stuff going on in that town, which used to be called what? Chocolate City. Even the January 6th hearings that's going on and the illegal detainage that's happening to some individuals. But it all comes to the forefront here pretty soon.
I don't know when the next election is in D.C., but and I don't know what her popularity is because I haven't been keeping track of D.C. like that. But D.C., even without this incident, a lot of the government officials they don't follow the rules.
Just like
it's got to be simple to get a permit.
Yeah, and plus, if you're going to have that many people that's gathering, where is the chemical toilet? The portable toilets for? What are they doing? Pissing upside of buildings and trees? In order to get those portable toilets.
Yeah, you need the portable
toilets. In order to get those public toilets, you got to show a permit for the event. They just can't drop those things off any place on the street at the whim of somebody who requests them. Where's your permit to put this event on that you want us to provide public toilets for? They didn't have no permit. So some people need to be sued from here to kingdom come.
And I'm sure that's in the works.
it's kind of like, and then they sue for the wrong thing, like they're making a memorial for Dante Wright up there in Minnesota. That young man was a criminal. You know the one that the police pulled her gun instead of a taser, which was an accident?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They want to make a memorial for him.
Didn't she get sentenced already?
Yeah, she got sentenced. She got sentenced.
I don't think it was a heavy sentence. But
unjustified.
Yeah,
look
at
his criminal record, how he has shot. Yeah, look at his criminal record, how he has shot somebody in the head. Now they're permanently in a wheelchair. How he attempted to rob the very two women that permitted him and a friend to spend the night after a party because there was no transportation out there. Then the next morning, he going to wake up and try to rob the women. That's a callous savagery act. Don't be driving a car without license, without insurance, and warrants. And when the police pull him over, and the police ask him to get out the car, which he did, and come back here to the back, and when they try to handcuff him, he going to go get back in the car and try drive off. And when he do drive off, he drives off and had an accident, which damn near, if not did, fatally injure another motorist. And these idiots up there want to make a memorial for him? What kind of country have things turned to, L.A.? Tell me.
Hey, man, like you say, somebody might be cursed.
They are cursed. That's why come Africans got rid of a lot of these dumb people back during that time. And now what you're seeing is the descendants, DNA-wise, of them. And if we can claim that curses work in voodoo and Tala, and what's that other one down there in Brazil? I can't think of the name. Kalahari, I think it is. Well, hell, it's got to be working in what's going on in America with certain segments of the population. It must be cursed. I sent you another picture of Chesapeake Valley. Did you get a chance to look at that?
Let me go look at it now.
In Ghana. That's a real nice
place.
I'm
opening up the email. Okay, wait a minute.
You make mention of it.
Juneteenth. You sent it after the...
I sent it to you just not too long ago. I don't know if I titled it Chesapeake Valley.
All right, the last one I got was the D.C. incident. And I just
refreshed
my email.
Well, you should have got one today.
Huh?
Yeah, so you should have got one here this morning.
Yeah, I thought. All right, the one I was reading was several incidents leave. We just talked about that one. Hold on, I'm going through. Hold on, let me put in Pianki.
Look at. Well, I got one of a Nigerian woman speaking very eloquent on an incident that France is trying to pull up. I'm worried about that right now.
Okay.
Because France is up to the old tricks again.
I don't see the one on that one, Pianki. I didn't refresh, been put in.
I'm going to have to hand you, and I'm here at Chesapeake. I'm going to be pooing not one, not two, but two.
I'm going to send it to you again. You can look it up yourself. But, you know, you talk about this other gentleman that's building these houses. He's a football player. And, of course,
the football player with the same name, he's not the builder. It's two people with different – I'm talking about the carpenter – / developer. I just mentioned when you look up that name, a football player, what his picture shows up, they had the same name, but it's not the same person.
Yeah. Well, you know, those things have been going on in Africa for a long time. But the thing is that those homes are selling for over $1 million. In American dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the prices of them continue to go up, 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 up.
Now,
and they're not affordable.
Who are they selling those? Let me ask you this because you've been over it. Who are they selling? Who's buying those houses? the locals or what?
You have some locals that can afford them, elite people. Because
mm-hmm.
here, I just sent you that Chisaka Valley. I liked this when I first seen it. And I went and toured a couple of the homes. And the house that I wanted to buy, have built, that is. But those houses are huge, man. See, Africa, they have 12-foot ceilings. They don't have no 8-foot ceiling. And the tile they put on the floor is immaculate. They're 2-foot square, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And they do some very beautiful jobs. Those columns in those homes, those are solid concrete columns. Those are not no plastic columns like you see in America.
Okay.
And the rooms are huge. The bathroom, it can be 10 by 10. And you got walk-in showers. And those bedrooms can be 20 by 20, especially the master bedroom.
Right.
And some of those have servant quarters, which is detached from the rest of the house. So they're really beautiful construction that goes on those. And usually they're not all financed and performed by, as far as the finance and the building, by native Ghanaians. Now, I don't know, things may have changed since then. Usually those foreigners coming from different countries that take on Ghanaian business partners. But like I say, now there are some projects that goes on that are native Ghanaians, but not many. And those houses selling for $260,000 Ghana CDs.
Okay.
And when you convert that to U.S. dollars, you're talking about over $1 million. Some of them houses go for $1.6 million in U.S. Now the houses I looked up at the time, one style. And it was a big house. It was like 12,000 square foot. And the house only went for like maybe $400,000 at that time. But now apparently things have changed for the worse. And that's what happened. Some people try to make up for slavery, Jim Crow, segregation, and everything else in one sale. And you probably know it yourself. Did you get the one on Chisaka Valley?
No, wait a minute. I'm, okay, let me, something just showed up. Yep, I got it.
Now, those two ladies that's narrating that, they are mixed. I think their father is Belgian. And he owns, and I think they run a very large pineapple plantation. They're near where my wife.
Oh, Pianki. You know what? What's her name? Reba, are you there? Okay,
yes, I am here. How are you guys?
Right, because I got to take a call.
How to get them coins up on YouTube. How can you actually make $20,000 a month on YouTube? Everybody and their mama wants to be a YouTuber. What is the number one reason to be a YouTuber?
Okay.
To get them coins though. Everybody wants that vlogger lifestyle, right? Where you can work when you want, travel when you want, you know, stay home with the kids, and still make.
So YouTuber talking about monetizing.
You're like me, and you
channel.
Really have no idea where to start or how or what you're shooting for. You know what I mean? It's like, I know I want to make $20,000 a month, but how many views do I really need to make $20,000 a month, and what do I need to do to get there? This video will shed some light on some actual figures that you can base your goals on. Let me just start off by saying, I personally have not yet made $20,000 a month, but it's my goal to get there plus, get 20K plus a month. And it should be your goal too. It should be everybody's goal. I do a lot of research about YouTube and trends and things like that. I don't always follow the trends because I'm just stubborn like that. I watch a lot of people who are more successful in YouTube than I am so that I can see what they're doing and kind of mimic that. And that's a really important thing. People say be genuine, be unique, be yourself. Half the battle is doing what's popular within and what everybody else is watching right now. So you can be unique, but don't be so unique to the fact to where you're just, you completely box yourself in and you're not reaching a popular market. I like to watch YouTubers that are bigger than me, not necessarily watch their content, because sometimes what's in is something that I'm not interested in. But I do always listen when they give advice. As cocky as people may think I am, I still have a lot to learn. I have a lot of information to give, but I still have so much to learn. So, like I said, I do a lot of research. What I have come to understand, I have found a general idea of where you need to be as far as frequency and uploads and how many views you need to make $20,000 a month. We'll start with my actual goal, okay? My more realistic goal. I do have long-term goals. Of course, my long-term goal is to be making 20K plus a month. That'd be amazing, okay? Like, hit a like if y'all want to make $20,000 a month. All right, just hit a like just for the idea of that. Just for the idea that you can make that off of social media. Okay, like my initial short-term goal is to be making $5,000 a month on YouTube. So, am I making $5,000 a year? No, not quite, but I am almost there. I'm talking about just AdSense money. I'm not talking about partnerships or sponsorships that you may have with companies, because of course that number goes up if you're talking about YouTube in a whole. But today we're just going to be talking about views and AdSense and what you can get generally. Okay, if you want to make $5,000 a month and you are consistently uploading every day or at least 6 out of 7 days a week, all month long for, let's say, 30 days, that is a pretty consistent upload schedule, all right? If you are uploading like that, every single one of your videos would need to be at about 21,000 views for the entire month. And this is just, like I said, a general idea. Now, YouTube gets kind of funky because it does have what's called a CPM rate. It's basically the rate you're paid for your ads that are ran on your channel, under your videos, or in between on your ad break. It's kind of hard to kind of figure out and pinpoint because it really goes off of the type of channel that you have. A DIY channel is not going to have the same as, say, a gaming channel. It's going to be completely different because their advertisers are different, you know? And so they pay at different rates. So you may get paid at different rates. You may get paid more than...
People, I'm multitasking here. Reba, you still there? Reba?
Yes, I'm still
here. LA, I sent you another video.
Okay, wait a minute. Reba, I got to... I got to do something for the next, like, 5 minutes. So, Reba, take care of Pianki for about 5 minutes till I get back.
Okay?
All right.
So, Brother Pianki, I was wondering, I do agree that that Dr. Umar Johnson is a bit redundant. What were your thoughts on... going down, you said it unnerves me as well, because I think that's what you allude to at times, and you just correct me if I'm wrong. Black folk complaining, it's not always my take on that when we speak up and speak out, but action speaks louder than words. So it doesn't seem like anybody's really listening or adhering to what Dr. Webb Evans, the Dr. Claude Anderson. And I'm not trying to blame white folk for where we are. I'm not. My father was wealthy. My mother left wealth as well. There are some wrongs, but I just say I don't even believe in integration. I say we do better than ourselves. But I don't necessarily want to be around every black folk person. Personally, I don't.
Yeah, you ain't going to stop integration. It ain't gonna be no whites in your city or your town or your anything else. You can't do that in the United States. And what separates people is class. The people that work the hardest and come up with good ideas usually put themselves in a different class when it comes down to economic status. And they seem to congregate together. near each other. And that's the way it happens. Nothing wrong with that. It's not saying that you can't, but you won't if you don't qualify to meet the minimum criteria. And not only the minimum, but you got to meet the sustainable criteria. Or you can't buy a $1 million home and live there for 40 years without maintaining it because things do deteriorate. So just to get you in the door don't mean that you can sustain yourself once you're inside the paradise or whatever.
Yeah, I was considering paradise. It's definitely
straight.
More peaceful. I got to confirm my... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those crowds that he attracts is not going to be doing that. They just can't do it. It sounds good. And it goes back to the old root of the cause that we talk about everything else. You want to be successful in this country, you get in, one of the first things you do is educate your children.
That's right.
To what
so that's
that
one concept
like, what,
I do agree with. Mm-hmm.
But all that other stuff about victimhood and all that crap. Hell, when black folks, I can show you some black communities. It's got, it's very, very nice, well put together and so forth. Well, they got some of the toughest policing that you ever want to see. Dang,
mm-hmm.
If I drive through one of the communities looking like I'm lost, police going to stop me, want to know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Because of that status, like you said, they handling business. For real. Talk is cheap.
Yeah, they got time to worry about somebody breaking in the house, burglarizing all that crazy mess, playing baseball and basketball in the street, got a car jacked up on blocks, taking out the transmission in the front yard or in the street. And nobody won't live in that kind of neighborhood, but sometimes people just have to. And what their object should is to get to the point a status where they don't have to live around that.
Well, the thing is, I can live anywhere. I live in a pretty interesting, I would say, community as we speak, and it's by choice because I got work that I'm doing. However, yes, I could do some work elsewhere, but honestly, being in the atmosphere, it motivates me because I realize I ain't got time to be sitting on my hands because I won't have to. I won't ever have to live in the midst of people who really, and I have compassion. I'm not community oriented. I have human compassion. However, so it's not like I won't see, you know, like one lady I was at Starbucks having a business meeting in a well-to-do Chicago area. I kid you not. So the strays, they come up there, and I say strays too. You don't have no business. You straying like a cat, you a stray cat, you or dog, you straying and whatever, maybe trying to find somebody to give you something or whatever. So the mental illness is a factor. And before I actually delve off into that, I really wanted to point out as far as living in demographics and having choice because of hard-earned dollars or families investing and so forth. And where their families will live. Well, Section 8 afforded people that really, as far as I'm concerned, many people, and I know people will hear this podcast and maybe have an issue with what I'm saying. I'm just speaking the truth in love. I never had Section 8, but to this day, even just yesterday morning, my 27-year-old was upset with me because I never got on Section 8. And, you know, my family just wasn't raised like that. I had a house. I bought the house from my mother's estate. It was 100% assumable. And so for you guys that are listening, if you don't know what an assumable mortgage is, that means that my mother paid the mortgage, and after she transitioned, my siblings and I could have just continued to pay it without having to get a bank loan or anything. She set it up whereas we could assume the mortgage by just paying it. And we're, you know, rightful heirs anyhow. Nevertheless, fought my siblings to get the house. They didn't want it, but they didn't want me to live in. So this mentality is my brother's wealthy. My sister's wealthy because she inherited wealth, not because she built wealth. I love her. She has something going now, you know, so she's, I know she's going to, I don't know if she's going to actually divorce her husband, whatever, but she carried the weight. And so she finally realized through an incident that, hey, But that male, all males are not men. He didn't have her back. Christian, fake, whatever. She made it look good. And I knew that all along anyway, but, you know, you let people do what they do. So keep in mind, three different mindsets. Now, my brother's wealthy, but you're going to try to block me from getting something that, first of all, I had the money to get. Not just because my mother left wealth. She left liquid proceeds in the estate, too. She had money in the bank for us to go in and get. Had all three of them, because my brother talked out of doing a will. But what I say, that all that to say is that even though we come, even my siblings and I, the three of us, we come from the same family, we have three different mindsets. And sometimes moving away kind of, you know, gives you that mind, you know, that idea. I don't know. But, you know, when people fight over stuff, when a wealthy loved one transitions, it's because they didn't spend the time that they were supposed to spend with that family, that loved one. Did you really love that one? Were you willing to offer a kidney because that person wants, you know, needed? You know, you don't have to, but you sure want to ask for that money when they go.
The second thing to make
my point about that is that I don't really plan on ever getting on Section 8, but I see my son's point to a certain degree. He's like, well, we were struggling, da, da, da. I said, yeah, but we were owners, and I could have did a home daycare while I was helping others. I was so naive. I was a Christian. So naive, Brother Kiyanki, helping other people, and that's what my son witnessed, and he resents that. He needs to heal because that's over with. Everything I do now, and I will even charge my family members as a consult. But Section 8
yeah,
gets to move and live with wealthy folk, and I don't feel like they deserve it.
What you're talking about is individual experiences, and we're trying to relate to general population. And that's
general population, you got a lot of people on Section 8, right? You got a lot of people on Section 8, generally.
Depends on where you are. And, you know, you talk about your general. See, to be honest, you talk about your own personal experience, but you got to bring somebody into the story. You got to bring somebody into the discussion who don't experience that. Never
yeah,
had
well,
with that
just,
way.
I mean, my family was wealthy, so yeah, that's different. But when you talk about people living in certain demographics, and because they have afforded themselves the opportunity to by working hard, well, Section 8 kind of actually allows people to live. Talk about integration. Yeah, I got Section 8. I can go live in, let's say, Joliet or Park Forest, because I got Section 8, and I can go and live with the wealthy, not having earned a damn thing, not having earned nothing, but because I'm quote-unquote poor, to me, it's another handout. Because keep in mind, they had the Section 8, the home ownership program. My cousin had it. Same cousin that I tried to do business with her to help build family wealth, which I already had it, but to build family wealth on the cousin side and the other cousin, and help the next generation, ran away with some money. I'm like, that was chump change, tick. You know, now I'm going to charge every, even family members, consultation fees. We sit, we talking, you're going to actually have to pay me as a consultant because now we're sitting down, we're doing business. Because if you walk away, I should have a win-win too. I should be able to walk away with something. So I give, but it ain't going to be free like that. It's going to be still. If I give, I'm marketing. You know what I'm saying? So other than that, I would say that Section 8, it's unnerving to me to a certain degree because I've seen even this one lady, it was a Tribune or something, not the so-called, it's called the Sun-Times, they were calling the newspaper in Chicago the Sun-Times, they were calling it the Black Paper and the Tribune, they were calling it the white newspaper. So one lady, her Section 8 was covering $8,000 a month. She was living on a high rise, $8,000 a month. No children, but she was able to get Section 8 for whatever reason, Section 8, and get her $8,000 a month. And those white folk were like, why does she get to live? And now she was clean to stay near. And that's my thing. As long as you're not destroying where I live, I don't really care what you do. I'm not just hating on you because you live around me and you have a different skin color, because I'm sure if she was white, they wouldn't have had no problem with her living there on her Section 8. Because keep in mind, it ain't got nothing to do with how you taking care of your family. So some white folk hate on folk too. Black, white, black, brown, Asian, they, you know, just some jealous humans. Some humans are just jealous and they have a lot of negativity to say. But I don't like the fact that with Section 8. They're not making these people. They had where they were making folk, and it's not just black, you know, a lot of Latinos and other ethnicities have Section 8. They weren't making them. They took classes, so they did like the minimum. They're not really helping these people to come become self-sufficient. It's a handout. So you got scattered sites. You got scattered sites. So you Section 8, they get to go live places where I had the money to go and live. And at this point, I just want to own my own property at this point. So I'm going to reinvest and get a new building, and I'm going to help some people. If you move in and you live where, in one of my properties, ain't no excuses. And landlord should, if you're not paying your rent, and I'm not trying to watch you every day, and you buying $300 pairs of gym shoes for your children or whatever you do, you know you got a roof over your head. Now you ain't got no excuse to say, oh, I'm depressed, I'm homeless, and I can't go out and work a job, because you got a place to wash your ass, your behind. You got a place to lay your head, get you some rest, get up, go to work, or hustle, or start your business, legal hustle or otherwise. The reality is that I have some, because I've had an identity crisis trying to help the community. The community should be held accountable to help itself. As far as tax dollars, I realized when I bought my mother's house that, yes, my taxes paid for the police. So as I heard, listened to that audio that Brother L.A. Played and the brother was talking about the police, and Dr. Claude Anderson says, like, you can see, they're not a politician. Money is power. And that's what you, I feel, that are alluding to with folk, white folk or whoever, because it's not just white folk. You got Jewish. And even in Wisconsin, I drove through an Amish community. They have nice, clean, ain't no trash on the street. I have a thing I tell young people. I say, let me see something. You throw trash outside of your car window in a neighborhood that you drive through, and you say that you don't want that SHIT in your car, but you want it on the street. There's no place for the garbage. So, I mean, it's certain things that I don't necessarily tolerate. I had this one chick that was at the currency exchange. She's like, oh, well, you such and such and such and such. I said, well, if you don't like it, then you could clean up. I said, because I'm not stepping over trash. That's just me. So keep in mind, it's the mentality. You got mental illness. See, and a lot of it stems from slavery. The mental illness. A lot, and all of our people, black, weren't enslaved, and I'm not just black. I'm actually French as well. My great-grandmother was not a black woman. You know, all of us got some black blood in us, but I have both sides of the spectrum. So when it comes down to it, I can identify actually as I choose. So, and to me, that doesn't matter. I'm a human being before you see what skin color. You never hear from me. If I change my accent, you wouldn't even know if I was a black or white woman. It doesn't matter. I'm a human being. So when it comes down to it, what do you contribute to society as a human being? What do you bring to the table? Because I don't feel that people should just exist. And honestly, looking at a lot of white folks, what are you? Okay, you working, you making your money, da, 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 do your thing. But when I look at these communities, they're earning their money, taking care of their property. And I like what the people in Joliet, Illinois did. Yeah, the Section 8ers went out there with their mentality, with a certain ghetto mentality. What do you think happened, Brother Kiyanki? Joliet residents who were homeowners. Take a wild guess. Now, they went to black folk and maybe Latinos, but I know it was black folk that went out to Joliet, Illinois. Their Section 8 was an influx of them. Destroying stuff. You think they still there? Hell no.
Ran them out.
And I like that. I tell that story. That happened some years ago. They got those black folk out of there. Section 8, they said, no, we pay too much for our properties. They're not going to come here and tear our community down. And I appreciate that, because that's an example of what you can do. Keep in mind, it's not that I don't like you because of your skin color, and I'm black myself. Most people identify me as black. Some people think I'm Latino because I speak Spanish and I got this little accent, but I'm actually French. My color comes maybe Creole. I don't know what the heck to call it. I don't really care, but it's just the fact that I am trying to figure out where my people come from, my heritage. I know what my father told me, and I know what he instilled in me, the knowledge and some of the research, even learning about my father's side of the family, where I had, we have a plant, we have a settlement. Let's say plantation. We have a settlement. We have a cemetery. We have churches. We have charters in almost every state with our family. We give scholarships to our children in the family when they accomplish something. And I found out that the women in my family were not able to inherit. They were not able to inherit. And one brother had a problem with this, what I said. It was a saying that went, a woman wanted to attain something, she had to get on her own and marry someone with wealth or marry someone with wealth in order to inherit something, which to me makes sense because you're not carrying on the family name. You're not carrying on the boo's name because you marry that man, you're carrying his name.
That's a good point. I leverage that with my kids, too.
Okay.
And bringing Johnny Go Lucky up into my house.
Mm-hmm. So the men were able to inherit the wealth and carry on the family name. And unfortunately, I found out some of my family members are selling some of, and I feel that they were doing it on the sneak tip due to COVID, the pandemic shutdown, because we weren't having our family reunions every year, which we do. They had tried to have one virtual, online, or whatever. So this business, I guess some delegates were appointed or heirs, direct heirs of some relatives. So they decided to sell some of our properties. Well, to one brother's point, he had a point that he made. He said, well, maybe everybody's not qualified to have that conversation on whether to sell property. Now, maybe some of those properties were being sold or are being sold because they're on the market now as we speak. Waiting on my cousin Susan to call in. Susan, well, she's in New York. And the thing is, he made the point that maybe some of those properties, maybe the decision to sell some of those properties were to pay off the taxes. Well, if you're handling your business, keep in mind, I'm an entrepreneur. We can do a lot, and I sing with a live band, and I sing my ass off. You actually, there's other ways other than selling the property to raise the money. You can also do business within the family. We got one cousin is a gardener. I don't know. I mean, it's up to how people want to do it. And once again, even within families, individualized. Like you said, I spoke my situation, my experience, because it's really horrific how people say what they don't have. Even within my siblings, why would you block me from something that you don't even want? And I just happened to be the manager. I was a go-to person. I'm supposed to have a law degree. I happen to be a teacher, but, hey, I'll get my law degree.
You live in Chicago, don't you?
I am in Chicago. Just came from Wisconsin.
Well, let me ask you a question.
My son. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question.
So I'm
what's this new law that the police can't change
that? I didn't hear you.
I said, what's this new law with the police, this new restriction where they handcuffing the police where they can't chase out the people?
I don't even know about that. Now, I don't watch the regular news. I get wind of stuff, like you word of mouth or whatever. If I'm visiting, I don't actually pay for regular TV. I watch YouTube. I listen to
officers
radio sometimes.
Will no longer be allowed to chase people on foot if they suspect them of minor offenses, such as parking.